Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
And welcome to the food scene on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. You got your sea legs today? Because, yeah, I'm starting to. I think I do. I have someone who certainly does and has traveled around the world seafaring. Jane Cogswell. C-O-X-W-E-L-L.
Yeah. Yeah, welcome. It's an odd surname. It's definitely an odd surname.
That's why I always ask, you know, when a guest sits down, how do you pronounce your name? Because you just never know.
Yeah. It's a tricky one. Actually, my boss's daughter, like a couple of years ago, said to me, you should really think about changing your name. It's like, that's the rudest thing anyone's
ever said. Oh, like your boss's name's easy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was like, your name means like you were born in, with a name that like suggests that you're always going to be powerful no matter like where you actually came from. Yeah, my name's...
Or an ability to spell it all out.
Yeah. Exactly.
But we'll get to who your boss is in a second. More about you. You know, that name too, that surname, doesn't have a distinct, you know, country or region to it. But you are so worldly. Rhodesian English parents.
Yeah.
First of all, I don't even know what Rhodesian is other than maybe the dogs.
So we have Rhodesian English parents, actually. They're beautiful dogs. So it's just, I was born in Zimbabwe. But before it was Zimbabwe, it was Rhodesia. So it's the same country as Zimbabwe, but that's where they're from, and everyone is really like diehard, and they all drink gin and tonics at like 4 p.m. And Rhodesia was a different place, and then Zimbabwe is struggling.
Yeah. I just wrote down gin and tonics 4 p.m., which luckily is about when this show ends. So
nice.
Yeah. So I might have to take you up on that
sounds
suggestion.
Good. That sounds good.
Zimbabwe, and then South Africa. How far away are they from each other?
Not far. I think it was like we drove. We kind of. My dad was worried about sort of the way things were going there, so we sort of fled. I mean, we weren't like tortured or anything, but we kind of ran away. We left everything there, and then we drove, and I think it took like a day to drive.
Yeah.
So pretty close. Pretty close.
I mean, it is obviously such a foreign country to the U.S., but I mean, really, it's such a foreign country conceptually as far as terrain, as far as culture. I mean, how was it growing up?
I grew up in South Africa. I grew up in Cape Town, and Cape Town is such a cool city. It's such a great city. But it's very much like San Francisco in the way that it looks and the weather and kind of the people as well. But, I grew up in Cape Town. I grew up by the sea. It's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll talk about a couple of recipes later, like Cape Malay. But that's a specific, you know, ethnicity of person in Cape Town?
Exactly, yeah. Like, Cape Town is so cool. South Africa is so cool for food because it's, initially it was only set up as a little trading post on the spice route. So it just became, we have all the spices from China and from, like, and India, and then the Dutch influence on the side as well, and then English. And so it's really, like, the food is really mixed, but yeah, like, really, really great location for having been set up just for people coming in and out.
You know, I don't know much of the food or food culture there, but one that I happen to know was boars, the sausage.
Yeah.
And boar itself is of Dutch descent, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's such a melting pot of people, you know?
It really is.
Coming down Africa, coming around Africa.
Yeah. And, so the Malay, I just remember what you asked. Actually, yeah, the Malay is the Malaysian.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. So they are. They're like it's a totally different group of people, but it's super diverse there. And so the Malay curry is like Malaysian cooking.
Yeah. So tell me about Boer sausage or biltong, or how do you pronounce B-O-B-O-T-I-E?
Babuerti is the dish, that custard thing. And then biltong is the dried meat. It typically is up on these massive hooks. And the main spice is coriander seed. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of crushed and then dried, cured, dried. But it's beautiful. Like, it's when it's done really, really well. I think you've probably had it when it's, like, seen it, especially if it's at the meat hook and it's done well. It should be sort of pink on the inside. And then it's dry and sort of crusted with coriander on the outside, and that's good.
Yeah, yeah.
And then wors is how you say the other one. That's like a traditional sausage, and it's kind of wrapped up into this big sort of circle. They just make a, like a rope, I guess, on deck. Like when you just go make a small circle, you just go like around, 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 around. And people take that huge circle, like, which could be as long as from like the tip of my finger to my elbow, just like, of going around and around, and then they'll put the whole thing on top of a barbecue, and then a bunch of South African men stand around like drinking beer, staring at it. That's kind of it.
See, now in my head I have the picture of you tying sausage rope on the boat.
Oh yeah, that's what I always think of when I see the boys doing, when I see the guys like on deck doing that. I'm always like, it just looks like a giant sausage.
So, you know, living in South Africa, there was a point in your life around 18 where you decided to leave. It's kind of, you know,
yeah.
You stir crazy. Get out of the house.
Exactly.
And you moved to London.
Yes.
And what happened there?
I was so excited mainly my goal, like in my little high school book, the thing underneath of the thing that I wanted to do was travel. So I went to London because I was like, this is the place that I'm going to travel from. I'm going to do everything. It's going to be great. But I actually didn't do any traveling from there. But I had a ball. It was a really good time. I had no idea how to cook anything. So I bought things out of like the bargain freezers that you get. I mean, it was kind of disgusting, but I couldn't cook. I had really odd jobs. I sold alarm systems door to door for like a year, 2 English winters as well, which was not that great. But that was also kind of the beginning of where I realized like how... I think my first interest is people, and then it's food, and that together where you realize like you're knocking on people's doors for a year. And I ended up having dinner with, say, like 3 different families a week in different areas, which over a year is like a lot of different families to be having dinner with and to have never met like an hour before. But that's the thing, is like it was always a little weird, and then you'd be sitting around a table and then suddenly it's like, oh, like we're friends now. This is legitimate because we've eaten together.
Yeah.
So then I left, and that's when I decided to go to chef school and actually learn how to cook.
Do you remember some of those meals, like nut loaf or salmon with watercress sauce?
The ones in England?
Yeah.
Well, actually, in London, there's like hardly any English people. One of my favorite areas to go to was this place called Southall. And it's like, I've never been to India, but it's like you... Oftentimes, I would be at a table with people, and there'd be like 2 of the grandchildren that could speak English, but the rest, like no one could speak English. And that was incredible. I had like the best Indian meals like that, like in people's houses. And then there's these huge families, like 15 people around a table in the middle of London. Those are the ones that kind of stick out. The other ones, kind of like lukewarm tea. Biscuits, not that great, but yeah, definitely Southall was my favorite for the Indian food.
Yeah, so you obviously had this wanderlust in you because London wasn't doing it.
Exactly, yeah.
And then with the people and food, you know, kind of amalgamating those two things, you traveled around France, Mediterranean, Adriatic, but you ended up going back home and finding a chef named David Higgs.
I did.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about him.
He is amazing. So I was really lucky. I, 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 I sort of wasn't quite, I actually went home because my boyfriend at the time dumped me and I was 21 and I was like, oh my God, I mean, this is it. Like, I don't even know. Like, if I died, it's fine. So I went back to South Africa and I slept in my dad's car for a while, like while he was in it having meetings and stuff. And I really was like a little bit pathetic, you know, just like young, broken heart. And my parents were like, you really need to do something. Just something.
You need to get out of the house.
You need to do something. So, I had a friend who was going to chef school and I saw them in their uniform. They were like, they were getting ready and they just got their uniform. And I was like, this is what I want. I want to have something like this, like something that like really you have to like work hard. Food is amazing. I mean, it was a kind of a really lucky thing, but he was like, well, there are 11 students and one of them, it was like the initiation day, like the very first day that he'd been. And he was like, well, one of the students didn't come today because she's not well. So she's pulled out of the whole year. And I was like, well, I'm going to go. And he's like, well, there's kind of a long waiting list. It's a good school. I was like, I will go and I will get. So I went in the next morning. I went in super early and I met with the chef, David Higgs. And I was like, I will work harder than anyone. I've always wanted to be a cook. This is what I'm born to do. I got to do this. Like, this is the best. And and I was also like, I'll pay you now. Other people, you have to go and you have to like contact people on the waiting list and it'll be a big thing. But I was like, I'll pay you now. So I did, and I was so lucky. I didn't know how to cook, and I hadn't thought about it before. But, like, from the first day, I was like, this, it's better than anything I've ever done. Like, this is the coolest thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's called Rust and Vrede.
Rust and Vrede.
Yeah. I mean, what stations were you working? Were you thrown in the dish pit? Were you working Garmel and Jay?
Dish pit, and his food is really beautiful. It's quite different from mine in that it's a lot more delicate and like it's a lot more refined and it's over more courses. But salads were like anything cold were really my favorite things to do. But we really were just like moved around the kitchen. It's not, yeah.
Yeah.
No specifics, really. And yeah, and the training, it was like his restaurant and his catering company mainly, and then just school, like a little curriculum.
So then it was hard for you to stay in one place and wanted to venture out.
Yeah.
And there was this felicitous book, How to Work on Yachts and Super Yachts.
Yeah.
I mean, did you have that in your mind or were you just in a library flipping through books and that just appeared in front of you?
Somebody had told me about it before. I'd heard a few other people having done something like that. And I thought it seemed like a great idea. So I bought it on the internet, which at the time was in South Africa. It was like quite a big thing to find a book on the internet and buy it.
Sound too, that dialogue,
So I bought a book on the internet. It was called How to Work on Yachts and Super Yachts. It was not a very good book. but I went to the place that it told me to go in France at the month that it told me to go, and then I just arrived. I stayed in a hostel with like fake grass, plastic grass, and like caravans in it, and drank a lot of wine out of like those massive bottles, you know, with the little screw top on and the little handle. Like, you know, it's bad when got a little handle on it. And then I was lucky. I got a job on a big boat as the second chef. So I just cleaned fish and cooked for the crew and like was woken at like every hour. I was the person who had like make sandwiches at 3 a.m. for drunk guests and stuff like that. And I just fell in love with it. It was like, I was like, this is the coolest job ever. I get to cook, I get to travel, I get to, it was good.
Well, I mean, what are the struggles? Because right now it seems kind of idyllic. I mean, are they hard kitchens to work in? Are they small kitchens to work in? Do you get nauseous rocking on the waves?
I actually do get seasick. A lot of people like really get over it. I still get seasick. And I don't ever throw up, ever. It's like after an hour of feeling sick, it's like the drunkest version of me ever. Like, I slur my words. I'm a little bit aggressive, which is also kind of strange because I'm not particularly an aggressive person. I can't see properly. I'm like, it's like talking to like somebody's drunk uncle. I don't like, seasickness is a problem, but for most people it's not. And they're just long. The things that make it difficult, it's just the hours are just really, really long. You make sure that you're up you know, for the first guest and there for the last guest, and their expectations are very high. You want to put out, make sure that everybody's fed, and you want to make sure that for the countries that you're in, you're paying respect to those countries. So you don't really master particular dishes. You just try and kind of learn it all.
Yeah.
Which is difficult. So there's like a lot of self-teaching. And when I started, there was no internet, so that was tricky. Like, because you can't really, if somebody asks for something, especially when I started working on American boats, like the breakfast orders, I was like, I don't even know what sunny is. I don't, like, sunny side up? What are you talking about? I don't, like, makes sense.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think just really thinking on your feet, and the hours are just long and you just work hard.
So, I mean, what made you want to keep on doing this? You've obviously traveled, been on wonderful boats. You work for the Halls, Ambassador Catherine Hall, and then eventually worked at Hall Wines in, in, what is that, Napa?
In Napa, yeah.
So being back on land...
That was amazing. Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, I continued because I really loved the traveling, and to be able to, like, to go to each place and spend a little bit of time, enough time in each country that you go in, and, like, go to the grocery stores and go to food markets and... I usually find someone who will show me around and show me their favorite food places. Those are all like the pros. But I missed being, I guess I just wanted like a home. But I worked in California for a couple of years at this winery, and that was incredible. I'd been working on their boat, and I told them I wanted to move ashore. So I did that for a little bit. And then I kind of needed to travel again. So I got back on the water, and I got the job on EOS, which is the one that I'm on now.
So talk to me about the size of this boat, because it is the world's largest yacht, correct?
It's the world's largest privately owned sailing yacht.
Yeah.
So there are other boats that are like those massive white things that you see. People sometimes say that they look like fridges because they're like these giant white sort of things. EOS is beautiful. It's a giant sailing yacht. It's 100 meters long, so it's like 300 foot. It's a three-masted schooner. The sail at one point, the front sail, was like the biggest sail in the world. It's a beautiful boat. Like, it's a beautiful boat.
Yeah. Does it feel like your home now? You've been on it since 2009.
Yeah, I have. It does feel like home, actually. Like, I'm based in New York, and I only go out to the boat when there's like a guest trip.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever I'm driving up on the speedboat, I always do think like, this is like, it's a great home. It's a pretty great home. And the people are the crew that I've traveled the world with and worked with for a long time are amazing. They're like the happiest bunch of people, really wholesome and happy and just friendly. And like, maybe it's the seawater.
Yeah. And what do you think about your bosses?
I like them a lot, actually. Luckily.
Yeah.
Because I do have like some pretty I have like agencies who match me up to boats that I want to be on, and then they match the owners with chefs that they want, and I make sure that I've been doing it for long enough that I'm able to have like a lot more restrictions on the kind of boat that I'll work on, and one of the things is just liking the people. Like, it's huge. Because no one wants to cook for people that they don't like.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's talk about the people, because it's no ordinary people. It's Barry Diller. And Diane von Furstenberg.
Yeah.
I mean, when you first met them, what was the interview process like? Did they tell you what foods they wanted cooked? Or did they look what style you had? Or ask what movies or TV you watched?
So, I actually was hired by the captain and the, like, purser, who's the person who takes care of all the crew and stuff on the boat. And they just looked at my food. They looked at my references. I think, references are big because I think that they're like, they look at the people that you've cooked for, and then they're like, oh, I guess it's okay. Like, it may not be great, but it's not going to be terrible.
Such an optimist.
Yeah. Well, and then you basically just have like a 3-month trial, and I spoke to their previous chef, so she gave me like all the stuff that they liked, the stuff that they didn't like, and then I joined the boat like 4 days before they came on. They had another chef who quit like the day before. I wasn't their first choice.
Yeah.
And so I was lucky that they took me, and so then I just, the first trip was a little rough. I wasn't maybe what he wanted. But she liked me, so then they kept me on for the next trip. He was like a little warmer, but like, maybe not that great. And then I think it just got better and better to now it's like a good, a good little, it's a good, yeah, it's a good thing.
Well, I mean, traveling Southeast Asia, New Zealand, Australia, Papua New Guinea, French Polynesia, Caribbean, Central America.
Yeah.
There's obviously a lot of food around the world.
So much food.
We're going to take a quick break and come back and talk about all those ports and all those spices and influences. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We'll be right back.
Every Wednesday at noon, Dorothy Kenn Hamilton, founder and CEO of the International Culinary Center, interviews the top chefs in the world on Chef Story. Hear from chefs like Christina Tosi.
I remember my first day as a real cook, like, I'm going to be the best pastry cook this restaurant's ever seen.
Bobby Flay.
I don't do anything on TV that I don't enjoy doing in terms of food. So whatever I'm up to in my restaurant life is what gets transferred onto TV.
Jacques Pepin.
I was invited to work at the White House for John Kennedy.
Learn how the greats become great every Wednesday at 12 p.m. on Chef Story on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
And welcome back to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Jerkel, with Jane Coxwell. And, I mean, we were talking about traversing the globe. I only wish, I think it's Biggie that has the been around the world, song.
Yeah.
I didn't want to get that wrong because he's a Brooklyn native and, you know, a lot of people at the station are rap aficionados. So I think I got it right.
Nice.
But, I mean, you have. You have traveled to so many places. And, you know, the thing is, when you come into a new city, a new country, a new continent, you dock. You come into port.
Yeah.
And the port itself is kind of like walking into a market because there's a lot of import, export, you know, things going on. How do you acclimate yourself to a new city that you've never been in?
I just get off. Like, I just get off the boat. And then most things are close by, like, especially, you know, like, because that's where everything started. Usually it's on the water, and then there's markets close to the water, and then there's fish, and there's whatever. I just get off. I try not to wear my uniform too much because it looks like a uniform, especially when you're somewhere like Papua New Guinea, and then you walk in like these all whites with like a little radio walkie-talkie thing. Like, no one trusts you.
Yeah.
So I try and like put on normal clothes and then go ashore and then just kind of walk around. We also have, the boat has agents in every country, so it's like somebody, one person or a company that has like connections in every sort of area. So like for whatever anyone wants to do on the boat. So say we find out where the best windsurfing is, where the best hiking is, where the best just anything within an area. So then there's usually a food person that I'm connected with, whether that's to bring food in or to take me to markets. So I usually just go with that one person. I get some local money, put it in my pocket, and then just kind of go.
Yeah.
It's really a cool thing to do. Like, that's been one of my favorite things.
I mean, that's what's so amazing about the book itself. I mean, there are a couple travel pictures there.
Yeah.
I'm very jealous of. One of my favorite, actually, I think it's a seal or something.
Oh,
where you had slid down a mountain accidentally.
I did, to get the
trying to take that photo, and they had to kind of, like, human rope you back
so
up.
So embarrassing. So embarrassing.
But your sense of adventure, again, it is, you know, something to behold. I mean, that it shows in your food, too. You know, initially in your book, Fresh, Happy, Tasty, which I can see now, you're a very happy person.
I'm a happy person. I'm a lucky person. Yeah, so I have to be a happy person.
But the book is, you know, first and foremost about cooking for fun.
Yeah.
You know, but cooking for feel, too. And you tell people to use your hands.
Yeah.
And I love any cookbook that just outright says you got to get your hands dirty.
Yeah, you do. You do. You cook a lot. You must cook a lot. You use your hands quite a lot.
It's the best seasoning.
It's the best. It really is. Yeah. And like I say in the book, like I don't know how anyone, when you see people tossing a salad with like things and you're like, what are you feeling? How do you know?
Yeah.
How do you know that? They're also very hard. And like if anything, like even just, even if you're going to put a fig in a salad or something, tearing things and like a potato salad, if you take little potatoes and you squash them and so everything is kind of crushed and like using your hands is
I also feel like being on a boat, you can't have everything with you at the time. I mean, you have to compact your life in that sense.
Yeah.
And I mean, you point out that a microplane is very important to your cooking.
Yeah.
You know, like a lemon squeezer.
Yeah.
Which you call a lemon squeeze, right?
Yeah, I do actually. That's funny.
Oh, they forgot an R. No, I think maybe she just calls it lemon squeeze.
Yeah.
You know, a twine for doing little papillote cooking packets.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, it's so trimmed down. But the foods that you make and the flavors that you must get just seem endless, boundless, which is really amazing that you need so little to make so much.
Thanks for noticing.
Yeah.
Because that's true. I don't I really don't use a lot at all. Like, I mean, I think that, you know, kitchen gadgets, it's nice, but it's really not my thing. Like, loads of stuff, and I don't really have much equipment either. I have the opportunity to. I have a really beautiful galley. It's big. It's quite industrial. It's a great place. But then I find, like, when I'm setting myself up, I really don't use very much stuff, and I don't think it's important. And you also realize, like, when on the smaller boats, especially now on this EOS, I got these beautiful big, like four big walk-in fridges and freezers, and like the facilities are really amazing. But when I worked on smaller boats, you have one fridge and like 10 guests sometimes for like a week.
Yeah.
And in Croatia, you have like a tomato and a zucchini and an eggplant, and you're like, right.
Yep.
Because like a week later, you still have that, and you've got the same guests, and they're paying a lot of money, and you're like well, I can't just, like the caprese salad, like I did on the first day, so I can't. But it's a good thing because you really learn how to use what you have, and really, you know, with like still paying respect to the ingredients, but like just the different things that you can do to them, and like what a bit of like char does in something, or what a bit of smoke does in something, or what a like just steaming something, or like it's amazing how you can change the flavor of one thing and really use things. Like, you really respect and use the things that you have, which I think is quite cool.
You know, and looking at the recipes, initially everything seems very straightforward, but there are those little iterations, those little tweaks that make it you, personally you. Yeah. And, you know, I even love the breakfast chapter because it starts with Bircher's muesli, which is a very specific thing, but it finds itself in so many different ways.
Yeah.
Even in the verines. I've never known that word before, but they're kind of like parfaits.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I mean, even you can put that in the parfait. So being able to use and reuse and reconceptualize.
Yeah. Like, for people to feel like every day there's something new and like fresh and exciting, but obviously not outlandish and not like weird. If people are on vacation for 2 weeks, they don't want weird food. They want like good, tasty food, but it also needs to be different. So then you're just kind of
like DVF's favorite lentil soup. I mean, it's a straightforward lentil soup until you see some button mushrooms for texture.
Yeah, I can't actually remember what I did with them, but yeah, it's amazing, like little things like that you throw into something and you're like, this is. Yeah, like for a little bit of depth, especially if you like roast them and then, mash them meaty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, I love the Middle Eastern watermelon salad because it has a different flavor. But I think the recipes I'm most drawn to in this book are ones that are associated with people or experiences.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you have, what is it, Naima's chicken tagine.
Oh, Naima, yeah. She's awesome. So she actually is DVF's cook in New York, and she's a Moroccan woman. She's like, her cooking is so good. I find out when I like try and find out when she is cooking, and then I'll go and eat her chicken tagine. It's so good, and the couscous is like, she calls it massaging. Yeah, every, I mean, yeah, her food is insane. Yeah.
So, I mean, you have the tagine, but then, you know, there are other dishes that are more you-centric. And
yeah.
We talked about Cape Malay before.
Yeah.
And there's a pickled fish dish.
Oh, the pickled fish is
good. Tell me a little about it. I know, like, pickle lily, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly where in the world that's from, but it reminded me of those flavors.
It is the same, yeah. Because it's like there's a lot of turmeric. I guess because the Cape has such, where I'm from, Cape Town has beautiful seafood. But like anywhere a long time ago, you would just find ways to preserve it so that you could put it on a ship and then make it travel for days. And that's like that pickled fish is a cool dish because it's a mix between Dutch food and Malaysian food. So then you've got like it's pickled and it's very tart and sort of vinegary, but it's full of turmeric. And raisins, and it sounds awful, but it's really delicious.
Does
and it
not you, sound awful.
You yeah. have to put you like make sure that you leave it in the fridge for 3 days before you touch it, before you eat it, and it's so intense and it's so good, like with crusty fresh white bread. It's good.
Yeah,
yeah.
I want to hear you explain more things, just because your diction, you know, the way you talk about food is so emphatic that you can make something as simple as the stuffed garlic bread. Which is literally a country loaf, torn open, stuffed with stuff, baked.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a beautiful thing.
Well, it's just so easy. I just wanted to make a book of stuff that people could use at home or wanted to use at home. And so people don't always have the time to make bread. I don't always have the time to make bread. But if you take a simple loaf, just like that, and you can do anything. And you just take a mortar and pestle and just pound loads of stuff and then shove it into a bread like wrap it in foil and put it in the oven for half an hour. Incredible.
Yeah.
Cheese, herbs. You say herbs?
No, I don't know what I say.
Oh, that's cool.
Terrible language. I'm terrible at English.
I doubt that.
That's why I have the international guests on, so they don't know any better. But you know, you also see aspects of South America, the Ecuadorian inspired ceviche.
Oh yeah, they put ketchup in it.
Really?
Yeah, and it sounds terrible. It sounds so gross, but it's a tiny amount. I went to this place called Quito. We were in the Galapagos Islands, and I had to go to Quito, the mainland, to find food. And I went by myself, and it wasn't very safe. I knew that it wasn't safe, but I didn't realize how unsafe it was until it was like dusk and I was walking around and these policemen kept on saying to me, like, what are you doing?
Really? I can't picture any place that has ketchup being unsafe.
Yeah, I know. You would think that, but it's, this, and I had ceviche there and there was like something to it that made it kind of, it was sharp and it was beautiful and sharp, but then there was something that was like creamier and sweet, but it wasn't sugar. And they put like the smallest amount, it's only a tiny amount, but they put the smallest amount of ketchup in, which sounds awful.
Yeah.
But that's what it was, and I tried it myself. I was like, this is really good. Yeah. It's really good.
But, I mean, I also love how you take spins on things. El Salvadorian pupusas turn into stuffed pita breads.
Yeah. I was working with a lady from El Salvador, and she was telling me about them. She was making them, actually, for lunch for the other people that were working at the house, and they're so good. Such a clever idea. Like, why wouldn't you take a piece of dough and shove it with stuff?
Yeah.
And then cook it.
See,
yeah,
I mean,
it's good.
You obviously don't specifically work with a style or a region or a cuisine.
No.
You pick up these little things like Hadari, yogurt sauce from Turkey, or, Vietnamese beef salad with rice noodles and avocados.
Yeah.
But then where do you get inspiration for things like the pale ale and shiitake pasta?
Oh, well, that's just me, like, cooking at home. You know, that's like making a quick pasta dish and drinking a Sierra Nevada at the same time. And then I could have reached in the fridge and like put some wine in because I was really putting a lot of color on the mushrooms, especially shiitake mushrooms. Like when you put color on them are so good because I'm like meat, not really like a vegetarian dish kind of person. But putting color on mushrooms helps things. But anyway, I could have reached for wine and then I just poured my beer in. And then that earthiness, so good. So good. I actually make that a lot. That's good.
That might be part of my repertoire.
So yeah, you should do that. Because you drink and you cook and then you drink and then you cook. That's good.
Yeah, you should put that as the instructions.
Yeah.
Now take
a
drink. Okay, now keep cooking. Now take a drink.
Make sure that you're taking a drink. Yes, it's an actual step.
So, I mean, aside from just your own inspiration traveling around the world, what are new ingredients, techniques, lands that you've been to that you really want to kind of tell people about, cook with?
I have to think about it. There's so much. I don't know. I mean, I recently went to Mexico, and I'd never been to Mexico before, and I think I had this, I think I had an idea of what the food was going to be, and then eating at, like, little roadside places, you realize that's like, they're such good cooks that they use minimal ingredients and then make, like, the greatest stuff. I like that. Like, I like all the spice rubs that they use. I think spice rubs, like dry spice rubs, are really underrated and incredible.
Yeah.
I think people always think like marinades, they need to be like wet and like sticky, and but like a dry rub, it's really good. Dry rub on ribs, good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm also thinking of volume too, being on a ship and, mm-hmm. you know, with a lack of space.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have more volume for marinades. You have more volume if you carry spice rub with you.
Exactly, yeah.
So, I mean, do you think logistically on the ship when you buy things, when you bring them onto, you know, board to process and cook,
yeah.
you know, I can't get this giant thing because it's just not yielding enough?
I certainly used to. Now I don't have to worry about it as much. But when I started, I really, really did. That's a really good question. Also, a watermelon, like, it's really heavy. It takes up a lot of space, and it's one thing. So I'm like, I'm gonna take away the watermelon, and I'm gonna have like 4 pounds of like mixed vegetables. It's funny, like, yeah, you do, like, you definitely like take things away, bring things in, and that's not gonna work out. Yeah.
I mean, you're on dry land. You live in New York.
Yeah.
What is your kitchen replete of? What do you have in your fridge?
At the moment, I have not very much. I do have a lot of beer, and I got a lot of fresh herbs, and I got lemons, and a lot of eggs. God, I wish it was better than that.
I kind of like this distinction, you know, because Diane von Furstenberg,
yeah.
you know, you cook on her ship.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you are very well dressed.
Oh, well, thank you. Yes. Are you telling people I'm in a dress? I'm in a dress.
Oh, yeah, you could actually say that. We're on radio. Yeah, you can make up whatever you want.
I mean, I'm not really well dressed.
Yeah. But I mean, there's an idea of high low with that too. I mean, you're serving this clientele like extraordinary food. Mm-hmm. What do you serve yourself? You know, how do you maintain yourself? Do you feel like your worlds are together when you're on the ship or very apart?
They're apart. I mean, I maintain myself with pizza. especially here, like, oh God, I mean, the food in New York is so good. I don't cook for myself very much in New York, unfortunately. I get so excited about coming here and having, there's so much choice and so many great places. So I try and keep healthy things in my kitchen because I usually eat out and, but yeah, it's kind of different. Like, my taste isn't really... I remember DVF, Diamond from Fisbury, asking me once what my favorite food was, and I said pizza, and she kind of looked at me, and then she looked away, and she carried on driving. We were driving to her farm, and then she never said anything. She never said anything after that. She's never mentioned it again, but I think she was pretty displeased. Yeah. She was like, that's not...
So you've never served pizza on the boat?
I did, actually. When I was in Australia, I went to this pizza restaurant. This guy had... The chef had built his own oven, and it was really, 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 really good. And then we had a bit of time there. We had like 3 months. So he came on the boat. I asked him to like measure the oven. So I have a big, big, big like industrial oven. And I have, we made these 3 stones. They're like really heavy. They're like 20 kilos each. I don't know what that is, but it takes like 2 guys to lift them up the stairs. My storage is like 3 stories down, so I lift them upstairs and I fill the oven and then I put it to 400 and I leave it like that. So I make my own, I do try and make my own pizza.
Yeah.
But I have to like choose the guests.
Yeah.
You know, because if it's just the two of them, that's not going to go down that well. But I'd use them as much as I can.
Awesome.
They're really cool.
Yeah. So what's your next voyage? Where are you traveling to next?
Nowhere too exotic. The Caribbean. It's not like, it's kind of in sort of the boating world, it's kind of seen as like the milk run, because there's so many other boats that are sort of all doing the same thing. And then, yeah, so I'll just kind of finish up the Caribbean season and then go over to the Med, which is always incredible because it means France and Italy and those markets and getting off in the morning for shopping and pastries, and that's pretty special. But at the moment, we're in the Caribbean, which is also good, but it's different.
Yeah. Envious. Very envious of your voyage, even though I, too, don't have sea legs and probably be nauseous.
I'm pretty jealous of you. This is pretty sweet.
Like, well, maybe we'll swap for a week.
Okay.
Yeah, you could be a radio host. And I'll see what I could do on the EOS.
I mainly just want to sit here. I don't know if, I don't know how good I'd be, but sitting here, this is a pretty
every Tuesday
great
at 3,
place.
You know where to find me.
Yeah.
Stop by.
It's pretty great.
Excellent. Well, you know, there's so much more I want to talk to you, and maybe we'll talk on boat or off boat some other time, but I just want to say again, fresh, happy, tasty. Wonderful cookbook, everyone.
Thank
run
you.
Out and get it. Check out Jane's food and travels and hear her stories. And maybe if you see that EOS floating by, give a wave.
Nice.
You've been listening to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Hoping to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.